Okay, thank you for being here. I understand it's the no seminar month. So this is not a seminar, it's just a conversation. Well, thank you for being here, all of you. I'm going to present an idea, which as far as I know is new. It's a group of people who have been working on that. They're the main ones. Other names I'll quote in talking. Couple of technical results which are done, I mean, especially one on which this relies, and a calculation trying to make this more concrete that we are doing and is not finished. More precisely, it's finished with a wrong result. I'll tell you why, and the hope is that then there's a version with a right result. Let me go back. The main idea is about a possible phenomenon, which is a tunneling phenomenon in quantum gravity. And the main idea is very, very simple. Atom or nuclei decay, like Uranus nucleus decays, is a classic tunneling quantum phenomenon, H bar. I think there are reasons to believe, and I will argue for these reasons, that black hole can do the same. This is not Hawking radiation, it's a different phenomenon, it's a genuine quantum gravitational phenomenon. It's a sort of tunneling of a black hole out of itself in a way that I will explain. And one of the reasons I'm giving the talk I think is interesting is that if this is true, is a sort of long shot, but I believe it's true with some caveats, which I'll illustrate. It might open a window for observing quantum gravitational phenomenon. It might be connected to some more things we observe, like radio, like gamma rays, but especially might be connected to fast radio bursts, which were signals in the radio part of the spectrum that were observed recently, which are of unknown origin, and there is a, again, long shot, but an hypothesis here that the two phenomena may be connected. So this is a summary, basically, of what I'm going to say. Just to introduce the present situation of quantum gravity, I'm happy to announce that a quantum theory of gravity has not yet been found, which makes everybody, so the promise is still open. There are theories. What we need, of course, is mostly observations. So my good friend Lee, for his number of years, that insists with me that we should go toward the concrete connecting the theoretical work many of us has been doing with observations. Now, what do we have as observations? Well, of course, there is all the work in early universe and possible traces of quantum gravitational phenomena in CMB. There's a huge literature there. There have been a beautiful idea of the possibility of quantum gravity-induced Lorentz violations, which have sparked a large amount of observational work, I guess 10 years of work now. A lot have piled up, and so far almost everything has piled up is a strong indication that at least in all the channels that have been observed, there is no Lorentz violation to the Planck scale, and in the proper sense even beyond the Planck scale, which it's disappointing if you wanted a positive signal, but on the other hand, it is a result about the Planck scale. And it is a sign that we do measure things at the Planck scale. For instance, we do measure the fact that certain possible Lorentz violating phenomena that were considered by theoreticians are not there. And essentially, this is all in terms of observations of quantum gravity, this and things related to that. So this is a new thing. I want to suggest that there is a third possibility of observing quantum gravitational phenomena, which has to do with black holes. And the problem is very simple. A black hole, we know black holes are in the sky. We know very well what happens. What happens there, right? This is a Penrose diagram. This is some collapsing star. This is a horizon. The classical theory goes wrong there. So we usually tell the student that there's a singularity there. Of course, there's no singularity. There is something we don't know what happened, right? That's what is quantum mechanics that comes in there. We want to know what happened there. So all the talk was is going to be about what happened there. By the way, this is just a parenthesis. There is large. Inside a black hole, the volume is large. There is a well precise invariant way of defining the volume inside a sphere. The sphere itself is small. If you forget Hawking radiation, from here to there, this is a sphere of radius of area, kind of 4 pi to m squared. But inside is very large. If you take a point here and you look at a volume inside, the volume is proportional to m to the fifth, where let's see, the volume is proportional to m squared times v, where v is a proper time from the collapse to that point. So the volume keeps growing inside. This is classical GR, that's with quantum mechanics, it's just a simple calculation in gravity. So inside a black hole, there's a precise sense in which there's a huge amount of space, contrary to our somehow intuition. Which, by the way, in my opinion, is a big challenge to everybody who thinks in terms of holography. If you focus only on what you see at infinity, and you think that the number of degrees of freedom is bounded by the area here, by some holographic, some version of the holographic hypothesis, how do you get all the physics inside here, this huge volume? Close the parenthesis. So this is a black hole. Another image of black hole. We know that there are all these black holes there. We know that matter falls inside. The question I want to address is a physics question. What happens to this matter? Fall into a black hole. You go in, classical JR tells you very well what happens through the horizon, beyond the horizon, then what? So that's the question. What happens to the matter falling into the black hole? Now, there are a priori, super naively, a number of possibilities. One is that it disappears, mysteriously. One is that it creates another universe. Remember Lee's beautiful idea of universes reproducing themselves, right? Natural selection of laws of nature. So it might just stay there forever, or it may come out. And I wanted to argue that by far the simplest, most plausible hypothesis is the last one. It may come out. So that's the question. What happened there? Okay. So let me start from a result by Hajicek and Kiefer several years ago. This is 2001. They observed something interesting, which is the following. If you take general relativity, assume spherical symmetry, couple it to a shell, a null shell, just because it's the simplest sort of way of modeling matter. Then you get a system, so you have a single two shell, thin. So then you write the equation of motion, you realize that the phase space is just sort of two-dimensional, labeled by when the shell comes in and the momentum, the energy of the shell. And the phase space has two compact, disconnected, two disconnected components, one for the incoming shell, one to the outgoing shell. It's completely obvious to everybody who knows a bit of GR. You do a quantum mechanical formal quantization of this, like Hajicek used to do, and you discover that there is a transition probability between this and that. So you discover that a typical wave packet that starts here has a component going there. So they suggested perhaps an incoming matter that falls into its own black hole, namely into the apparent horizon, let's say, or the classical solution of the actual event horizon, might tunnel quantum mechanically into a white hole, matter coming out from a white hole. Now, this was 2001. There are various reasons for which this is attractive, various reasons for which this is not very attractive and difficult to believe. So this is the result. A formal quantization is a transition between the two components. So why is attractive, what is intriguing, and what is the difficulty? It's intriguing because we know that quantum mechanical things can go through potential barrier that they don't go quantum mechanically, so why not? Why couldn't I go from here to here? And remember that What we think about black holes is that they slowly decrease with Hawking radiation. But Hawking radiation takes forever. It takes m cube in time, in Planck unit, which is zillions of time, the life of the universe for a big black hole. So Hawking radiation is an extremely weak phenomenon. There's an enormous amount of time before a black hole actually shrinks by Hawking radiation. And during all this time, isn't there time for this quantum tunneling? Now, the difficulty is that here, sort of, you have to tunnel the entire universe, right? You want to, this is an asymptotic region, and this is another one. So you have two asymptotic regions. So you have sort of to think that there's a quantum tunneling because one full solutionalized equation to another full solutionalized equation, which is hard to believe. And another difficulty is that, well, once you've seen this calculation, what can you do with it? There's nothing that tells you how long it would take to go from here to there. In fact, there isn't even a meaning of how would you compute going from here to here. So that was the situation. Now let me come to the technical result, which I mentioned at the beginning, which is what I believe make this vague idea reasonable. So the technical result is in a paper by Haggard, Hal Haggard and myself last year, is the following. That's the first concrete thing which I'm going to say. So far it's just ideas. And it's the following. There is a metric which is written here. I'm not going through the full details. I'm just illustrating this metric to you. Which is, so globally is just, this is a Penrose diagram. So globally is nothing special. There's no no actual event horizon there. No singularity. It's regular all over. And in all the white region here is an exact solution of Einstein equation with zero matter, except here where there's an incoming shell and here there's an outgoing shell. In the gray region, no. So let me go slowly, illustrate it. Imagine you start from Minkowski, so it's empty space, Minkowski metric, and there is an incoming shell, a null shell. Then, of course, on the other side, you have Schwarzschild, a total normal Schwarzschild. The shell has a certain energy. At some point, it enters the radius 2m, where m is its energy. So there is an apparent horizon that forms, okay? The shell continues. At some point, you go into quantum mechanical region, obviously, because the density is Planckian. So there is a point in which the shell goes into a Planckian region. So from now on, in this region here, let's assume that I can violate the vacuum Einstein equations. So if I compute the T mu nu, I don't get zero. Okay. But here, no. So here is just Schwarzschild. And so far, well, so what's strange? Well, the point is that you can continue this solution. This is still Schwarzschild, the same Schwarzschild, it's continuously Schwarzschild, all the way to a region where there is an outgoing shell, a past horizon, a past apparent horizon, and the other side of the outgoing shell with the same energy, there is Minkowski again. So this is remarkable because it means that, why it's remarkable? Because it means that you can have a collapsing star and then an exploding star without anything funny happening outside. Okay, classical GR, vacuum Einstein solution, T mu nu equals zero outside a certain radius. So the tunneling from the incoming collapsing star to the outgoing collapsing star is completely local, finite in space-time. It's possible. And then suddenly the Hajicek-Kiefer tunneling becomes much more plausible at this point. It's not the full universe that boom, boom. It's just in a specific region of space-time that something may happen if quantum gravity allows this to happen. Yes?
Is there something similar for something that's not a null shell? What happens if there's a normal massive shell?
Oh, the null shell is because we can do the calculation with the null shell. We haven't been able to do with a massive shell, but we believe that it's exactly the same would happen. There's absolutely nothing that knows about the null shell.
What's now, the earlier result of Petrusek, where he said if you modify the Einstein equations in the vicinity of the singularity, you look at them and edit the physical sign for coordinates, for example, the singularity looks like a tube.
The,
and
yeah.
If you modify the Einstein equations just in that neighborhood, he could make the black hole bounce.
Who did that? Yeah, but yeah, sure. But then you have a, you don't have an exact solution of Einstein equation around and after. It's very hard to do that in Adrian Finkelstein coordinates because they're not time symmetric. They're not time reversal. And he has a past event horizon? He has a past event horizon form of the other side? I don't think so. I think he shows that this is possible, but not that it's a solution of the Einstein equation.
He definitely shows us a solution outside a certain tube. It closes the singularity in a tube. It has arbitrary evolution.
Okay, we can. Oh, outside a cube? Oh, sorry. Yeah. But the point is that here, the region that is solved the Einstein equations is not just inside a tube, it's before some time and after some time. So it's confined in space and time, not just in.
Yeah.
Which is
cool. I think you were stuck with it.
Yeah. Now I get that. Which is
the
what.
Point is you can actually get rid of the tube in the future and the past. Just some localized region.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So now we can talk about tunneling from here to here. That's where I'm going. Yeah. Now, if you look at this and you know generativity enough, you think this is not possible. Come on, Carlo. You're certainly made something wrong, because look, this is Schwarzschild. Schwarzschild. Of course, there is a trapped horizon in Schwarzschild, and of course there is a future one and a past one, right? But the other way around. So you can extend Schwarzschild into a black hole. And you can extend Schwarzschild into a white hole, but how can you have the white hole after the black hole? There's no way. Okay. Well, there is a way, and that was the little thing that made things work. You just have to realize that all the Schwarzschild region, which is the white region outside the shell here, is isomorphic to this, but locally and not globally. It is. That's the isomorphism. So that's actually how you construct that solution. Let's start here. Take the standard Kruskal extension of Schwarzschild, right? Cut this part here, gray, and you see there is a black hole here. You fall into black hole. This is a shell collapsing. Cut here, and just draw it this way. You can draw things as you want in a Penrose diagram. Do the same with this time reversal. Draw it this way. So in other words, cut this part, open them like that, and squeeze a little other metric inside, right? This is the thing. Yes?
So Carlos, the shell is collapsing, entropy also is growing. So when you do this cut and paste, are you not in danger by the second law?
This is good. So this metric here is symmetric under time going to minus time. And in fact, it's made by two parts, which is pretty obvious the way I describe it. The lowest part and the highest part is just the time reversal of the upper one. So it's, you know, if you take a ball, you let it fall, goes down, it bounces, it comes up. And if you disregard any dissipative phenomenon, the way it comes up is exactly the same solution of the way it goes down with t minus t.
Sure, but
I'm
not disregarding the.
Exactly, I'm getting that. So if you take a real ball and you let it fall, then of course it doesn't come up exactly the same manner. The way it comes up is a little bit different because it does lose some. So the idea on which you're working is that this is you know one solution of Einstein equation. So there's no dissipation here. This is a first order approximation on top of which now you have to see what are dissipative phenomena doing. And that's what Matteo has been doing for some time together with Eugenio Bianchi, studying in particular Hawking radiation, which is a dissipative phenomenon, and it's obviously not time reversal, on this background metric here. Okay. Now, the point is that how much is going to change that? And this depends on, I'm anticipating a little bit, on how much this is going to last. If this is last short, then Hawking radiation or other dissipative phenomena are going to affect it little. If it's going to last, I'm going to get to that. So for the moment, forget dissipation. And let's say that I'm discussing a purely mechanical, in the sense of non-dissipative phenomenon to this approximation. All right, so this is a picture. Black hole falls and bounces. It gets to sort of a matter, gets sort of a minimal things and bounces up. Now, why do we like this picture? Well, because in some sense, it's the same as what in loop quantum gravity, what happened in cosmology, in loop quantum cosmology. In loop quantum cosmology, you have a collapsing universe, you get a density, it's a Planckian density, and then you have a repulsive force. So the physical intuition here is very naive. You know, you cannot squeeze an electron smaller than something because of quantum mechanics. You cannot squeeze matter smaller than something. Some sense, energy is conserved and it's going to bounce back. That's a picture. Now, the actual metric I wrote is determined by three constants. M is the mass of this thing falling in. Epsilon, which sort of determines when you enter the quantum region here, just knows about h bar. It's just essentially when it enters the Planck density, when the repulsive force. And then there's another parameter. This is a work I've done with Francesca before finding the classical solution. Then there is another parameter, which it's a key one, which you can view as how this quantum part goes out, but it has a precise geometrical interpretation, which is the following. Remember that in GR, time passes faster up, slower down, right? You studied that. So imagine that this is Minkowski. This is Minkowski, by the way, with a preferred frame, which is a frame in which shell is coming in. So at some time in Minkowski, I'm here. I see the shell coming in, bouncing, and I compute the proper time from here to here. And my brother is just at some fixed radius, so it sees the shell coming in, it waits sometimes, and sees the shell coming out. And then it can compute the proper time here and here, and what I get is for the proper time here, these are the number for a stellar black hole, for a black hole mass of the order of millisecond, the time here is the order of billion years. So it's obvious what's happening, right? The fact that's the precise formula for the time here. This is a classical metric, so you can compute everything. The time dilation, the standard generativistic time dilation, is so huge because it's black hole, because it's a lot of gravity, so to say. So sorry for doing this. Inside is just a bimp. Outside takes forever, right? Which means that it gives a picture of a black hole, this story. What is a black hole? A black hole is a star which goes to its event horizon, its horizon. It gets to the very rapidly to the center, bounces out immediately, boom, boom. Takes just the light time goes to do the radius. But seen from the outside, this you see this is a huge time dilation, a slow motion. So billion years pass before you actually see the sun, the thing coming out. So if this picture is reasonable, what a black hole is a bouncing star in slow motion. All right, so now the question is, what is the time? How long is this t? Let me call t this quantity here, right? The huge time that you see from the outside. And you see, it depends, is minus m log delta. Delta is this little parameter that knows what happened here. The three parameter in the metric. It's a very small number compared to m. So this is a small number. This is minus. It's a huge. Is a huge number. Sorry for this. I have to wait the billion years. Okay. So a priori, what do you expect for the time? Well, various possibilities. These are all the reasonable possibility. One is that it's exponential in the mass. Why? Well, because you say, look, this is a tunneling phenomenon. Tunneling phenomenon in quantum mechanics is exponential reaction over h bar. So here is the action over gm. So there should be an h bar downstairs, h bar g downstairs. So this is actually m squared even, so huge. Now I believe that this is wrong for a number of indications that this is wrong. One comes from the second line. One comes from the work of Mazur, the fuzzy balls and so on, in which he tried to estimate something similar and find out that the huge suppression due to the exponential of the action is compensated by a huge phase space volume due to the number of states. But also because if you try to do this concretely, you see that the situation is really different than quantum tunneling. It is a tunneling phenomenon, but it's not the standard tunneling that you use for atoms, because time here is not an external time in which things happen. So the intuition that leads to that formula don't work here. Time is one of the parameters in the action itself, not outside. So you don't have a time to... So let's discard this for a moment. And then we have an upper bound, which is m cubed, and a lower bound, which is m squared. This is always in Planck units, right? So there's a huge difference between m cubed and m squared. M over m Planck for a star is 10 to the, what, 30, 40, 30. It's huge, huge number. So we were talking about big differences here. Now, remember all the firewall discussion, Polchinski and Marov and company. Something very strange happens. If you just forget that and you consider Hawking radiation, something very strange happened at Planck at page time, which is sort of half the life of the black hole. And what they do is that if you assume unitarity infinity, you assume a number of things, then what you get is what they call violation of the equivalence principle at the horizon. Now, many of us relatives don't believe that for one reason. So one way of viewing this is that something else happened in nature before the firewalls. Now, firewalls happen at m cube. So indirectly, all this firewall theorem, because it's a theorem, suggests that something goes wrong. And what goes wrong? What goes wrong is that you come out from the regime where perturbative quantum field theory on curved space-time is good. Okay? And this would be a fully... This is a tunneling phenomenon, so it's outside perturbation theory. So if this is true, then it should happen before m cube. But m square is what I think is the real answer. Why m square? Because you need something to happen outside the horizon. Outside the horizon, the curvature is low. So how can you have low curvature and quantum gravity phenomena? Well, you know, tunneling is a typical case in which you have quantum phenomena where you wouldn't expect it eventually. But you have another parameter which is big, which is time. In fact, it takes long. So if you take curvature, you multiply by time. So if you have a weak term or two, but a sufficiently long time, you get to something Planckian when curvature time is the order of the Planck scale. And this, if you do the calculation, happens when the time is order m squared. So this is where I really think, when I really think the phenomenon happened. It's still much longer. Still very long for a stellar black hole, but it's much shorter than the Hawking time. Now, we did a calculation, which I'm going to tell you in a moment, and we got m log n. We were very excited because we could do the calculation. And in fact, the second big message I'm giving here is, look, we have a way of doing this calculation, tunneling quantum gravity. Unfortunately, this result is wrong. It's wrong because this is too short. For a stellar black hole, I mean, it's not compatible with the existence of black hole in the sky. Stellar black hole would bounce to me. So I'm sorry, I wish I could give you a stronger and more clean result, but that's what we have at the moment. We are redoing this. There was some cheating in the calculation. There were some infinities under the carpet. There was some oversimplification, maybe a bit. So how do we do this? Well, this is the idea. So this is what a compute, and essentially you want to understand what happens going from here to here. So for this to happen, you have to go from this metric, which is this one, by the way, to this metric. Okay? So it's a standard, is exactly the kind of thing you can do with quantum gravity. You have an initial metric, intrinsic and extrinsic metric. You have a final one. You want to know what is the probability for going from one to the other. Classically, you don't go from one to the other because you're giving position and momentum initially, position and momentum finally. But quantum mechanically, you have a wave packet here, you compute the probability of going from one, one to the other. So the actual metrics here and here can be easily computed because of this. And by the way, because of symmetry is the same intrinsic metric, and the extrinsic metric is flipped signs. So the calculation is pretty easy. It's just given a certain metric with an extrinsic curvature, what is the probability that it flips to the same metric which opposite certain? So plop, it flips the other side. That's what we want to compute. And we did a calculation using loop quantum gravity, the full equation of loop quantum gravity. I'm not going to to describe all of them, but the point is that there are boundary states which have an interpretation as metrics, and there is a transition amplitude, an explicit transition amplitude. That's what I think is the best version. That's not the version we have used. Aldo Aiello is here. That what I think is at present the best version of this transition amplitude, which is the one cosmological constant. The one I'm giving here is without the cosmological constant. I'll skip this. What is the idea of loop quantum gravity formulated in this manner? That you don't have space-time to start with. So you don't have an arena which is space-time. You want to compute processes which are the same thing as space-time region, given what happened in the boundary. So you want to associate an amplitude to states on the boundary. So you have state associated to the boundary region and transition amplitude associated to the to each state on the boundary. I'll skip this. And I'll come back here. So I want also to leave some time to questions. So, So here we are. We took the simplest possible case in which we have a geometry with a certain value of the intrinsic geometry, a certain value of the intrinsic geometry, and we flip to the opposite. And the simplest possibility is to have, in the language of covariant loop quantum gravity, a very simple spin network in which we have a vertex, because you want a vertex passing from one to the other, you want to use the vertex amplitude. You have a state on a single link, a state on another link, the same J, because the J knows about the intrinsic geometry, opposite K. This gives a number, okay? It's just some integral of SE2, SL2C, etc. It's a number which is just a function of J and K. So you have an amplitude, it's a function of J and K. The square is the probability. You ask when this is one. When this is order of one. For most JSON cases, it's negligible. For some values, this is not negligible. In fact, if you plot it, it's a function of k, it's just very flat, and then it comes out for small k. And j is related to the mass because it's the size of what happens here. K is the extrinsic curvature and is directly related to delta, the small parameter, if you take the classical metric and you compute the extrinsic curvature here. So you look at this, you get a relation with J and K, and this translates to a relation between T and M, and that's what we got, T and log M. As I said, very happy with that, but it's phenomenologically, physically is wrong. However, yeah.
Could you have done just a semi-classical calculation? In other words, look for a complex metric solution of the Einstein equation
and interpolate
your initial
time. Compute the action.
Yes.
We tried and we failed so far. I couldn't. I couldn't find a classical solution of the Euclidean equation that matches to.
It could be complex. It doesn't have to be.
I didn't know how to handle the Einstein equation. Yeah, it was a. So it's not that I failed because it's hard. I failed because I failed. Maybe it's this easily impossible, but I tried for some time. Left. And then I was much more keen of using LQG. But on the other hand, in principle, this calculation can be done in whatever, not in perturbation theory. In perturbation theory, you don't expect to see anything. But in any quantum theory of gravity you have, or in any approximate quantum theory of gravity, like Euclidean quantum gravity, and try to do that. So this is also recent. This is not published, this thing, because of that. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing right now.
So I had a set of questions of robustness.
Yeah, that we're doing right now. So we're trying to do a convergence. In fact, what we did first is try to do a full-scale triangulation of this geometry, and do a bona fide calculation like you would do in really loop quantum gravity. You're a good scholar. You do a triangulation, you approximate the metric, but then it was complicated. So we zoomed to that. We thought maybe we get it that, and that's. Sorry, the state we put here is a coherent state, the kind of thing that have been studied a lot also here in PI, and a coherent state is labeled by a J and a K. So it is a wave packet, it is exactly a wave packet. Now, let me go to the last part of the talk. Let me assume for the moment that the real result is either T of m squared or T of m cubed or something, which T of m squared is what I think is more visible. Now, if you take a stellar black hole, something that collapsed in our galaxy sort of recently, m squared is still a long time. We're not going to see it. So the star collapses today are going to explode, assuming this is right, in the future. But what about primordial black holes? Imagine that there's a black hole in the early universe, and it bounces, times is very fast inside, but it's very slow outside, so it comes out now. Let me take t equal m squared, for instance. Then I know t is a Hubble time, I can get the mass. So I know the mass of black holes that collapse, if there are any, in early universe and explode today. So the first approximation, if I know the mass, the signal, I know the Schwarzschild radius of this thing coming out, and the first approximation that the wavelength of the signal that come out, and can we see it? Now, with T of m cube, if you do this calculation, you are in the cosmic ray spectrum. There's a paper in which we are trying to analyze that. The expert of this is Aurelien. More interesting, at some point we got, we believe that this is wrong, and we got convinced that T is m squared is right. So I was very afraid of asking what's going to happen, and Francesca insisted, and we computed what is the wavelength, and the wavelength turned out to be in the centimeters. So the mass is sort of a mass of the moon, roughly, and the wavelength in centimeters. So, or millimeter. And this is matches the wavelength of this funny signal that have been observed first by Parkes in Australia, and then by Arecibo in Puerto Rico. And there's a lot of discussion about these things here. These are strong signals in the radio. Here are some feature of them. There's a big power, most likely are extragalactic. That's what the astronomers tell us. So it's a long shot, but could these things here be exactly, the black hole exploding and sending a signal today? It's a long shot, but there's a nice aspect of this, which is in fact valid for both, which is the following. Suppose we, in the future, we see many of these at larger and larger distances. Then we see ones that are higher than Z, and those ones have exploded earlier. So they have lived less. So they were black holes, primordial black holes that lived less, so they have a smaller mass. So when they exploded, the wavelength was smaller. So there is a relation distance to wavelength, which folds over the standard cosmic redshift, and gives a very peculiar curve, which is this one, redshift versus wavelength, versus frequencies. And this is very peculiar, so I don't see which other phenomena could give such a. So if these were these objects, they would have a very clear signature that would emerge if we had enough statistics with the distance. So that's all what I wanted to say. Let me summarize. First of all, a technical result, that's the only solid part of everything I've said, of course, which is that there is this metric, which is a classical metric compatible with the possibility of a tunneling of black hole into white hole. I think that because of this, the fact that the black hole could tunnel into a white hole, it's pretty convincing. I don't see why it shouldn't. I've given this talk in a couple of places, and I didn't get any objection to that. What the question is, how long it takes. If this phenomenon takes a time much longer than the Hawking radiation time, then it's irrelevant. Right? It's like the probability of me going through that wall. If this phenomenon takes shorter than the Hawking radiation time, then it's relevant. And in principle, with loop quantum gravity, you can compute it. Presumably, with other ways, you can compute it. If, as I suspect, the time is of the order of m squared, then or between m squared and m cubed, then there might be possible astrophysical signature. And on the distance in the future, there will be a precise signature for detecting that. It's a long shot, but it's interesting because I think it opens the possibility of an observation in quantum gravity. And it's also a challenge to other people doing quantum gravity in different manners to study whether they can say something about this phenomenon. Yeah, we'll take questions.
Coming back to the classical part,
this one, or you want the full?
Whatever.
Okay.
Just so we can see the space-time. This one. So this space-time, even restricted to the classical region outside of number three, I think it has an issue, and that issue is that it's not stable. So if I'm going to use Eugene Bianchi's language, if I were going to throw a ping pong ball into this space-time, only the classical part, it would come back at me like a cannonball or something even exponentially worse than this. So the space-time is not just unstable with respect to weak Hawking radiation for a very long time. It's unstable with respect to anything. So even without a cannonball, without a ping pong ball, just coupling to the vacuum would make this space-time unstable.
I don't know. I think it's good that people study that. Maybe. I don't know. It's worthwhile looking at it. So that's a classical solution of equations. Maybe there are nearby solutions which are interesting. Maybe no. I don't know. No idea.
You don't think it's worth mentioning or talk about?
Well, I was sure you were going to mention. I think it's worthwhile looking.
Have you seen something? So you don't need region 3 to have an instability. If you have something that, some sort of a ping pong ball that grazes the edge of region 3, goes down, crosses the outgoing shell, and comes back in region 1 at the top, it comes back with an energy that's impossible.
Yeah, this is a calculation that we do in quantum field theory with progressive space-time. How do you take into account the cutoff that is given by the fact that today's quantum field?
Yeah, this is first of all, this is a shell. So it's clearly any physical solution that represents reality is not going to be this one for a number of reasons. First of all, because a thin shell is a crazy approximation, generativity is only used for doing calculation. Second, because any reasonable solution, black hole, is rotating. So I think one should do the rotating case, and that's one of the things we're trying to do in Marseille. So one should do the same with Kerr, not with with Schwarzschild. And third, because this is exactly symmetric, and as Louis was saying, right before, the any actual physical solution is not going to be exactly time reversal symmetric, right? A ball doesn't jump up in the same exactly same way it falls down. So I don't think it makes sense to study this specific metric as a God-given thing and see whether there are...
It's a God-given thing.
Well, it's just a step lower. I think this is a an indication of a class of things that may happen, and one should study this class of things that may happen. That's what that's my. And what I'm much more concerned is whether there is a Kerr analog of that. Kerr, a rotating analog of that. Right? We of course is something calling it. And the other thing I'm very much I want to do is to have two shells. What's going to happen with the second one? So how are they? I think that the idea by itself is solid. It is possible that things fall into a black hole and bounces up without violating the external classical Einstein equations. Then the detail how things are happening are all to work out, in my opinion.
There's a general feeling that white holes generically are associated with instability. It goes back to a long time ago, there was a suggestion very in the early days of black holes by Doug Ridley that maybe the Big Bang got delayed in some portions and there were sort of late living black white holes.
Before the theorems? Or the white holes?
White holes, yeah. The delayed, and they were supposed to be responsible for something. I forget what. Gamma ray burst. I forgot exactly.
Oh, delayed Big Bangs.
Delayed Big Bangs, yeah. And the opinion formed, although I don't know that there's any big theorem, that white holes generically are unstable and that this wouldn't work, that they would be rapidly converted into black holes. And the one calculation that sticks in my mind is one by Prakash Panangadhan and Bob Wall, where they tried to compute Hawking, mainly from Prakash. They tried to compute Hawking radiation from the white hole, and they got some absurdity. I mean, to do the analog calculation, the quantum field theory in curved space time in a white hole black hole, they got some absurdity huge, which is compatible with what you're saying. I don't know the exact status. I don't know that there's a theorem that covers this or doesn't cover this, but it's certainly something to worry about, I think, in connection with any white hole scenario.
Yeah. Let me give you my experience. I studied general relativity in the 70s on the book of Weinberg. And I remember my teacher saying that, there's a solution with black holes, but there's nothing in the universe that corresponds to that, most likely. And this is what the book of Weinberg says.
But there's not what?
There are no black holes in the universe. If you look at the book, just look at it. It's when you... Yeah, but there's still Stephen Bach. Yeah, so, but this is still too hard. But that was the common view in many physics departments at the time. And certainly when I studied in Bologna, they told me that there are no, most certainly there are no black holes in the universe because you cannot squeeze the Earth down to a centimeter. Something happens before, some whatever, some instability, something, okay? Then it turns out the black hole actually are there. Somehow nature managed to use this Einstein equation as well. Now, later, I studied in the book by Bob Wald that there are no white holes for similar reasons. I would be surprised if there are no white holes for a very simple reason. Because of the, let me work the other way around. We have theorems that says that in classical general relativity, there is a singularity form, right? The Hawking thing. So a singularity form. This means that if you're here and if you move this way, classically we encounter a singularity. Now imagine, imagine whatever happens in this region, okay? If there's no another universe that comes out, or if there's no something dramatic outside physics that comes out, something is gonna happen here, which might be. Where is Lee? Lee? I said or. If there are no other universes that come out, or if there is something outside physics. If you're here and you look backward, imagine you're here in the post whatever thing, and you look back there. Whatever are you going to find? This is a classical solution of Einstein equation. You want to work it backward, You enter into the quantum region. Classical generativity does not know about the quantum region. So what else should give you? A singularity, but a past singularity, not a future singularity. So from here, you see a future singularity hidden in this past horizon here, a future horizon here. From here, looking backward, you see a past singularity hidden by an horizon here. So it seems to me the white holes are extremely plausible things in nature to describe what happened, what classically you would see just something emerging from a singularity. Now, the details of how this happened, I don't know, but I think it's much more than trying to say that specific solution cannot happen. I think it's interesting to see what can we say about this scenario, are there solutions in which this can happen, and could we do some physics with this?
Well, yeah, I think I would agree with most of what you said. Except that the worry is not from a singularity theorem, the worry is from an instability, a putative instability associated with that kind of geometry. And that's quantum field theory in curved space-time. Now, if you're going to do away with quantum field theory in curved space-time, which it sounded like you were going to do.
Yeah, I haven't. Sure.
You said you would do it prematurely from the point of view of the usual semi-classical story. If you're going to change quantum field theory in curved space-time, then it reopens the whole question. I think the derivations of the instability would have to be rethought in that case. But then you have to tell us what replaces the quantum field theory in the curved space.
Oh, no, yeah.
Why it's no longer valid in the regime where we thought it was.
Let me just answer to this part. Here, it's something happens which violates quantum theory, perturbative quantum theory in curved space-time. Here, right? Just on this, which is what you need to avoid the firewalls. It's one of the possible things you need to avoid the firewalls. Yeah,
that's if you believe there has to be unitary evolution outside. Quantum field theory in curved space doesn't give you unitary evolution. So anyway,
If you have a singularity.
Horizon, if the horizon is not there anymore, then you can restore the
event. There's no event horizon here, right?
Yeah, but there's a whole bunch of issues that are coming in here.
Yeah, sure.
To organize the discussion.
Yeah, so.
There I would say there's a question of time. It usually takes reasonably long. You're left with remnants that last a huge time before you. If you accept the quantum field theory in curved space-time as it usually is, and if you compute the Hawking radiation from that, then you come down to a situation in which it no longer holds and all the information has to get out. But the mass is so small at that time, and the radius is so small, that the energy available for sending out the radiation has to be parceled. In order to get the right amount of information out, it has to be parceled up. Very, very red photons, and then it takes an immense time for it to come out, much, much longer than the end of the universe. And so you're left with, in fact, a remnant. The remnant may go away in eons and eons and eons, but in practice, you have to add a whole bunch of remnants. I'm just repeating the usual objections. This scenario denies quantum field theory in space-time at a much earlier stage than one would normally do.
What do you mean by denies quantum field theory?
That's what I understood, because
there is a tunneling. It denies in the same sense in which the decay of a uranium atom denies a first-order approximation in perturbation theory around the unperturbed solution, which the alpha particle stays inside. It's just a non-perturbative phenomenon, simply. I mean, and curvature is small here, right? Is over the of one of the radius cube here. The idea is that there might be a phenomenon, a quantum gravitational phenomenon here, in spite of having weak curvature, because the time between here and here is long.
But then, so you have a black hole that's evaporating only by the normal Hawking radiation.
Right. So either
it comes down to a certain state.
No, but no. If it's m squared, it barely evaporates.
Okay, it's just evaporating a little bit, and then completely unexpectedly, it explodes.
Yeah, that's right.
And that this
that's right.
And the time of this. So here's the thing that bothers me the most about it. It relates also to Jim Bardeen's, for example, scenario. Mm-hmm. Is that what the black hole does? It has a memory of how it was formed. So you said it yourself, right? The different mass black holes would evaporate in a completely different way. So we see an object as the black hole's radius. Most of our physical intuition, it's just intuition, but most of our physical intuition would say that's just some object. It's characterized by its mass and its angular momentum and so on, and nothing else. But you're saying, in fact, there's an infinite number of such objects.
No, but it's kind of profound. There's this process going on. It's not a static object. It's not in any kind of equilibrium. There's this process going on in the inside in which these both. In terms of something on the inside, the explosion is happening.
Exactly.
Right.
So then
on the outside, we can't see any difference.
That's right. That's
right.
So where would the whole thermodynamic aspect come from?
It's wrong.
That's
wrong.
Well, okay, but then that's quite, for some of us, uncomfortable.
So in this sense, it denies quantum field theory in first space time.
No, no, you're not. Carlo,
can you go back to that picture that we just gave? That one. Can you remind us, region 3 sticks out of the horizon a little bit.
Yeah.
Why is that, and is that a problem?
If it wouldn't, the horizon would go all the way to Scry. It would be an event horizon. And the Scry plus would end here. So you would never have a...
because otherwise it's just Schwarzschild. So
that's right. That's right.
But then you have this region of the quantum region which is exposed.
This region of the?
Yeah.
The solid quantum region is exposed.
Yeah.
So how about, if I had to guess, why not have the horizon end exactly at the point at the edge?
Because it does. Delta is very small. This is very small. From the outside, I didn't do it here. Can use a few of the minutes we didn't use. From the outside, what you see is the following. Imagine that you have a sphere which is reflective of negligible mass. And you have a light shell that comes in, bounces on the sphere, and bounces out. Okay. And let's say that the mass of this shell is m. If the sphere is much larger than 2m, then you're in a relativistic case and it bounces. As the sphere approaches 2m, if you look from a distance, you see light going on, approaching this mirror, and it takes forever before, it takes longer and longer to come out, right? And as the mirror approaches to m, it becomes longer and longer and longer and longer and longer. In the classical case, when the mirror arrives at 2m, the time is infinity. What I'm saying is that before that, there's a tunneling phenomenon that happens that allows the bounce to happen. This is the outside picture. So you can, in principle, you could replace the horizon with a mirror, which just is just a little bit outside it. And that would be classical physics in which you go, you know, at a distance, 2m minus, radius of the mirror minus 2m, smaller and smaller and smaller than Planck size. And then you don't believe that anymore. You enter in a quantum region, something happens.
It'd be exponentially smaller than
a... Exactly. There's no physics there, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
But what happens to things like the area increase theorem, all the theorems that are proved impressively, gravity that is similar to the picture of the horizon that we have?
This is not an event horizon.
What?
It's not an event horizon. This is a metric.
Where's the almost?
This is a... This is an apparent horizon. This is a trapping surface. This is a trapped horizon.
Yeah.
And this is another one, a past one. A past one.
But the star collapse, it forms a black hole. It seems to have a horizon.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden.
And then, but then we have theorems that are proved, like the Arrhenius theorem.
Yeah, but the theorems assume that you don't go
to
the tunnel, so he's going away.
The theories assume that H bar is zero. At the point.
The theorems are
obtained, I know, but they could be all right, but I'm just asking, is it an implication of your story that there are all those theorems are just...
Oh, yeah, of course, because if you... Sure. I mean, we have a theorem that tells us... we have a theorem that tells us... what the question is, what happened there, okay? If you believe this theorem, you get into singularity, period. So the theorems are strong. There is a singularity. Now, as a physicist, I believe that the appearance of a singularity means that you go out of the regime of validity of the theory, so the Einstein equation not valid anymore. Now, the subtle question is that are they not valid here, here, or here?
The question is where? You could form black holes. They're still lasting a very long time.
Yeah.
The theorems that tell you, for example, when two black holes merge, that the area should be greater than all those theorems are based on the geometry being what it's normally thought to be.
The geometry is exactly what is...
You have a mirror just outside the horizon, which is completely disrupting the geometry. I'm just wondering how much of the whole story...
It's not... The point of the mirror is that the metric here, is exactly a local isomorphic to the Kruskal metric. There's nothing funny happening, except for a teeny bit there, which is sort of near the horizon after a very long time, speaking imprecisely.
So suppose two black holes form when they merge, that would all be the same description?
Yeah, exactly the same. Exactly the same. Yeah. Sure. That would be the same. Sure. Yeah. Certainly.
What about the fate of cosmic censorship? More generally, would you say that quantum gravity is the root of the existence of
I think I to give a serious answer, I should think about this more. So let me give you cosmic censorship is something which tell us what happened to singularities given by what the relation of the singularities and horizons. Okay, so if singularities have to do with quantum mechanics, then this is a relation between where the quantum region is with the relation between these locations and the horizons. But it cannot be, if this picture is correct, that the quantum region is entirely hidden inside the horizon. So in that sense, I don't see a direct quantum version of the singularity theorem, if this is the case.
The cosmic censorship is a conjecture. Conjecture so that it's convenient, we can keep doing classical physics and we can do everything we know. I mean, there's nothing proven, so it's a big open question. And there are counterexamples, of course, they are fine tuned, but this could be a fine tuning mechanism. So, can I ask a question? So, let me say I buy absolutely everything and it's great. So, now,
thank
in
you,
the prediction, these are related to the fast radio bursts. But there is an estimate of how often these guys are. And you have a prediction, but you can now tie to what is it that you expect, or what system you would expect can collapse from a black hole and give rise to this one? Do you think, are the numbers consistent?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it goes through the number of primordial black holes.
Why primordial? I mean, any black hole that collapses. I mean, you have tons of scenarios. You have supernovas, you have binary mergers.
Right, but to have a collapse, to have the black holes that we know, we see being formed, which are stellar ones, you have large masses. We don't see a small black hole forming. We see large, at least stellar masses, at least the solar mass, a little bit more. So the t square, the m square, the time corresponding to m square of that one is longer than 10 billion years.
And m is too short, but it could be something.
I mean, it could be something in between. Sure.
There are numbers between 1 and 2.
The original calculation?
There are numbers between 1 and 2, yes, of course. Okay, yeah.
We but, are working out the terminology.
M cubed
is too long, but fine. Well, for m cubed, then you have a signal that is in the gamma regards.
But that's still time morning. Yeah, there
is supermodel because you need the time.
No, Lee is saying between m square and m log n, between these two. So this is longer, this requires a premodal black hole, and is what gives the fast radio burst. This is too short and what comes out from our calculation. But this is not consistent with the black hole we observe. But it could be something in between.
No, in fact, the best one would be
0.01. Just to come back, a little bit away from what we have to talk about, but just the idea that there's an instability still seems to me doesn't close the discussion, because the instability, if you agree that the singularity is eliminated in the quantum region, the instability says this description is too simple for the future of the quantum region, but it doesn't tell us what the right description is.
Yeah, it's just
The problem with the instability is related to the care thing, because I'm
the halfway.
I got lost. What did you?
If singularities are eliminated, it doesn't solve the problem. If you convert the white hole into a black hole, then
so
it's
singularity. Then you have the instability. Then you have the singularity inside the black hole, just like everyone has to deal with it.
Then you have a quantum region that replaces that singularity, and then you have the future of that quantum region. And then, so maybe it's,
you mean my brother was all this?
No, I mean. Singularity doesn't solve the problem of what the fate of the quantum region is. Just open, do you agree? Just open up the question.
The instability is, there's a similar instability in care, right? I mean, in a rotating star collapsing. Where does the matter of the rotating star collapsing go? So you do the maximum extension of care, nice, beautiful, and pretty, with all the internal. And then you try to track where the matter will go. You can do it with a shell, a rotating shell, slowly, so it doesn't radiate much. And it goes inside, and then you don't know where it goes, because it modifies the metric in such a way that that it destroys the... So it's a similar...
It's very similar.
It's a similar... Yeah.
Same story.
So in a sense, that's why I'm looking at care, because there at least there's some... Oh, right in Austria. Ah, okay. I will look. Thank you.
So maybe this is a reductor to the assumption that there's a quantum region which is accessible to black holes.
Sorry?
Maybe you could turn this instability argument to an argument that if there's a quantum region that replaces the singularity, it can't be accessible to black holes, which means basically it has to be a baby.
I don't believe black holes are forever. Nothing is forever. They come out. At some point, it comes out.
How about toxic?
Sorry?
Toxic.
Going back to your metric, that's sort of the most definite part of the story.
Yeah.
It's obviously not a solution of the classical I'm saying.
Not in that region, not in the gray region. Everywhere else, yes, but not there.
Yeah. So, can we think about how far it deviates? For example, compute some sort of action. I don't know what the right star is, but some sort of action associated with this metric. I understand it's not just pure space-time, it doesn't matter. So if it was just pure space-time, then the action, at least the integrated scalar curvature, would be zero in the global solution. If you violated it somewhere, you could ask how much is the integrated creature scalar. I mean, I'm just wondering if there's some sort of some integrated violation of the energy condition, some sort of quantitative measure in action terms, how far are we? That's maybe another way of getting a handle on how severe is the tunneling that we're contributing to the...
No, we started computing Timu Nu, we computed, we saw the violation of the energy conditions, which of course has to be there to circumvent the theorems, but we didn't think about quantifying it. That's a good suggestion. So try to say how much.
Just to take something out of it, take trace of T, say it's negative, and some integrate that over space time out.
Mm-hmm.
Something like
that. Yeah. Everything depends on three constants here. One is the Planck scale, which comes in here. One is the mass, the size of the thing. The mass gives the size of the. And then there is this delta, Kuchel delta, right? Delta is how long. It's a small number, but the smaller it is, the longer it's the time from.
That's
it takes.
How close your mirror is to the.
That's the close. Yeah, exactly, exactly. So whatever we compute is going to be a function of this, which may be interesting because it may be related to time. We can relate it to the time.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe one last question.
So do you have a physical picture of what triggers this Eugene on local, the bounce, I mean, which is Eugene on local?
Yeah.
And it's not curvature because curvature outside is low. Inside is large, so do you have an image?
It's a very good question. It's not curvature because, as you say, we could think it's curvature in a large portion of this, but not going out, right? Because at some point, curvature should go out, should go down.
That sense should be something a local can be.
Yes. Yes.
Space-like?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this is why we, in this sense, one is outside quantum field theory on closed space-time. If this describes physics, this is a quantum gravitational phenomenon in the sense that there's a metric, imagine it space-like,
sure,
that tunnels into another one.
Why doesn't a smaller portion tunnel than the rest? I don't know. I cannot really phrase a question in the right way, probably. The image is that I have this huge interior of the black hole that, as you said, it keeps expanding during time. And at some point, all of a sudden, all together, at places where local physics is very different, something happens. And I was wondering, it looks pretty necessary in the sense that if I want to resolve the space-like singularity, there is not much else that happen in that sense, unless the singularity is not space-like or something else for some reason. The question was if you have in mind
I think it's. I can just, since it's the last question. My own feelings, because I can only talk about feelings here, is that if we want to do quantum gravity, we have to take quantum mechanics seriously. So it's it's horrendously difficult to understand exactly what happens when a uranium nucleus decays, because what we do in our equations is a wave function, you know, that spherically symmetric goes all over, then the Geiger counter clicks and disappears. There is a specific mystery of quantum mechanics, which is the usual one, which you know very well. When you use it for doing metrics that evolve into other metrics, locality is just not there. So can we? So in other words, if we believe that we can compute transitional amplitudes from boundary to a boundary, then this to some extent means that in between you're integrating over all geometries. So there is no, yep. There is no. But that's very wave heavy.
Well, just that since it can happen also in regions of low curvature, there are tangent regions of low curvature, which I don't know, I don't have estimates, but that could go through funny transitions.
Ah, no. This this is compatible with standard. If you take Minkowski, curvature is zero, so it takes forever for something to happen. If you take the surface of the Earth, curvature is whatever it is, it takes forever for something. Just standard quantum mechanic tunneling, right? Things happen that are not allowed classically. But this doesn't mean that classical mechanics go astray. It means that there are only some cases in which this happens, and that you need something of the Planckian order. So if you multiply curvature times time to get something Planckian, it's very hard. So one possibility is to go very, very close to the horizon and to wait 14 billion years for a reasonable black hole. And then
the question was, what is the curvature? Just at the lower boundary.
It's not constant. It's higher here and lower coming out. So here is Planckian. And this point is Planckian. And that point is Planckian. Yeah. That's what sparks. If except that this is space-like. So yeah.
Okay. Then I would say let's thank the speaker again. Thank you.